The Buccaneers are Super Bowl champions. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Ira, it's Monday. The celebration is on. Your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's very first family of Ford, where they are celebrating hard with everyone else. GM Sean Sullivan is all fired up to keep helping Bucks fans and just keep loving the Bucks like they do so much at Bill Curry Ford. Sage, what a game, what a performance, what history. You know, what else can I say? I'm just going to open the floor for you before we get to Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks fan. Of course, I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks fan. Sage, what a year, what a situation, what a scene. The floor is yours.
I had the privilege of going to the press box at Raymond James on Sunday. I hadn't been there all year. I hadn't been there for Buck home games. Got to see a lot of people. And Lee and I were, 6 feet apart. Steve, normally Super Bowl press box, and I've been in a lot of them. You barely have enough room to put your computer up. So hats off to the NFL for doing the distant thing. Steve, I couldn't believe what I was watching. Nobody makes the Chiefs look that bad. I mean, I said they made them look like the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I don't think that's far off. Now, Steve, I'll say this quickly, and I don't want to dwell on it. The Chiefs stunk. The Bucs had a lot to do with it, but not everything, Steve. Not everything. The punter stunk. He hurt them. Andy Reid stunk. What are you doing calling timeouts at the end of the half when you can go in down 14-6? You're going to get the ball. Arians wasn't going to do anything. He gave they had one timeout left, a minute left. He gave the ball to Fournette. They were letting the clock run down. Let bygones be bygones, Steve. Reid got greedy. And here's the other point. You go in, you know you got a banged-up offensive line. The Bucs have a voracious pass rush. You don't give them any help. You don't give Mahomes any help. Put an extra tight end in. Put a blocking tight end. No. Instead, you're sending Sammy Watkins and Mecole Hardman out. Well, that's diminishing returns, Steve, because that's not going to matter if Mahomes is running for his life. So now I'm going to turn my attention to the things that the Bucs did do to the Chiefs. The game was won up front. You know, I think Bowles was getting a little too much credit for the scheme and the secondary. Steve, the game boils down to a very simple thing. Brady had all day, and Mahomes didn't have any time. I mean, do we need to go past that? And it doesn't shock me that Brady got a stout protection. Steve, you watch these games like a hawk. I know you. You watch the same plays 7 times. I'll invite you for this, Steven. Watch the second touchdown pass to Gronkowski. Brady had all day. Gronkowski might have been option 3 on that play. There's nobody near Brady. Nobody. And hats off to the offensive line. Fantastic postseason run. Fournette, tremendous. Steve, I never thought he would play that well. I thought he pouted in the middle of the year, but he got over it. He got over it. He played a whale of a game. And Steve, the Bucs were fantastic. I mean, they were fantastic. Forget about those DPI calls. That's nonsense. People saying the same thing after the Green Bay game. Oh, the officials did this wrong. The officials, forget that. The Bucs were better, Steve. And I said going in, the Bucs had the better team. I stick with it. And Steve, I'm not going to ask you for an apology, but you and I went at it on Gronkowski, and he sure came up big Sunday night, Steven.
An apology, Ira? Come on. I just didn't think
An acknowledgement? How about an acknowledgement?
All right, Sage, I'll give you your due on saying that Gronkowski would come up big in the big game and to ignore his quiet play over the last handful of weeks. But you're also going to have to give me, I told you, I gave it to you good, all this Tyreek Hill overhype, oh, he can't this, you can't stop him, and this and that. The Bucs made him look impotent. He dropped a ball in the end zone. Maybe it was tipped, maybe it wasn't. He didn't look like an all-world player, and I attribute a lot of that to very athletic and very aggressive Bucs cornerback, Sage.
No question about it, Steve. But I'm going to go back to my main point. Steve, I'm not going to get off it. It's a heck of a lot easier with that young secondary, and they played very well, and they contested a lot of balls, no question. But Mahomes, he was never comfortable, Steve. Even with, Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher and the guy that opted out, the doctor, I think it's, a fairly average Chief offensive line. I'm not enthralled with Eric Fisher, but he's certainly better than his backup. That's where the Bucs had the biggest advantage, and they exploited it. I mean, Shaq Barrett, It's going to be tough for the Bucks to let him hit free agency, Steve. We'll do plenty of shows on, you know, looking ahead to free agency. JPP played well. And, Steve, do I have to mention Devin White's name again? The kid's going to have six Pro Bowl berths in his, you know, in his portfolio before he hangs it up in about 12 years. He's on a fantastic roll.
Well, it was just inspiring, Ira, on so many levels. The pass rush that took so long to build and was so well-crafted, dominated. And one thing I wanted to put past you, Ira, just to get your feeling when you were there looking at the sidelines as somebody, you know, watching the game in person and just in general as well, I thought the Bucks did not look intimidated for 1 second, not for one play. I understand they started slowly on offense, but I thought overall they looked like the experienced Super Bowl team out there, start to finish.
Excellent point, Steve, especially considering the Chiefs had been there before. And even the year before they won the Super Bowl, they were in the AFC title game. This was all new to a lot of Buck players, Steve, and that brings us to number 12. Steve, you can't get around it. You just can't get around it. Steve, I did an interview with the main big sports station in San Francisco. You know, they like to have me on, and they introduced me, and I said, welcome to Titletown, welcome to Titletown. And the guy started talking about Brady. Steve, he made an interesting point. He mentioned Bill Russell. He said, this is the greatest winner or whatever. This guy is like Bill Russell. And he mentioned some other people in golf, like Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. And Steve, I quickly corrected him. You would have been proud of me. I said, we can't talk about golf or tennis. Those are individual sports. In terms of team sports, Steve, I think Bill Russell, I think he's the only comparison in terms of lifting up the play of everybody around him. And Steve, you may not agree, but I think the intangibles of Brady were just as important, if not more, than his play on the field this year. And that's saying an awful lot, Steve.
Well, without question, what can you say? I mean, it's not even worth saying over and over and over again. We talk about Brady and the impact. And the reality is, over the next handful of months, we're going to learn a lot more about what was really going on behind the scenes. You know, we talked about some of the stuff that got out this past week. But, you know, there's a documentary being made about Brady, similar to the Last Dance with Michael Jordan. And they've been filming all year. The Buccaneers are going to be putting out various videos that they've been working on. And these stories are going to start coming out. And the exciting thing is that he's coming back next year. But I will say this about Brady, one little nugget. Sage, Ndamukong Suh was on CBS this morning, you know, one of the morning shows that's usually politics and stuff and fluff. And he was on there talking about Brady's pregame speech to the team and how much it moved Suh. And now Suh, look, the guy's a 10-year veteran. He's been all over the place. He's been in a Super Bowl. He's hanging out with Warren Buffett, which he talked about on the morning show. He's a businessman. I mean, this is not an easy guy to impress. And he talked about Brady's speech about honor and about how the Super Bowl is about your family and your friends and being part of history and just the how you'll always be honored. And just it really got through to Sue. And he talked a little bit about Brady as a teammate. It's just mind-boggling. And what can this guy accomplish next year when he actually has time to sit down and have lunch with the secondary, which they couldn't do in COVID. And he can spend extra time with the wide receivers and really get deeper on things. And, you know, you see some of the pictures after the game from our Joe Bucks fan photographer. We haven't obviously shared the hundreds of pictures that we have, but we have a photo array of Giselle coming up to Byron Leftwich and giving him a massive hug and their embrace and they're talking and then they're re-embracing. And it's pretty obvious that Leftwich was a big part of this and is just a great fit for Brady. It's so exciting going forward, Ira.
And here's some great news for Buck Nation, Steve, in the offseason. And I think you'd agree. We're going to see the Brady effect carry over into the offseason, my friend. And by that, I mean, now look, I'm not naive. You know, if the Bucks offer Shaq Barrett X amount of money and another team offers them, 75% more money, I'm not blaming Shaq Barrett for walking. But, you know, in terms of keeping guys, I think they're going to think about Brady and the chance of running it back. And perhaps even more importantly, and Steve, I don't remember the last time we've ever said this, probably 2003, but Tampa is now a destination for free agents. It is. And, you know, it's not only Brady, but he's the biggest part of it. And it's the talent around him. And who wouldn't want to be part of this? You got a heck of a coaching staff, committed owners, and a chance to repeat. I mentioned J.J. Watt, Steve, on the San Francisco broadcast. I was kidding, but I only half kidding. I mean, you know, there could be a fire sale in Houston. People don't want to be with that organization. You know, maybe we find a little spot for J.J. Watt. Maybe we fit him in somehow, especially if Shaq Barrett leaves. But, you know, if it's not J.J. Watt, Steve, it's somebody else. I mean, that's thinking, you know, picking between two organizations. And, you know, the Bucks offer a little less money than somebody else. But, you know, I want to win a championship. I want to be part of the Tom Brady success story. And you got to think next year, they got a darn good chance, because I think they're going to be able to keep this team pretty much intact.
Well, they're going to lose a couple of guys. We got time to talk about that. Who knows where it'll be? Of course, there are many options to renegotiate contracts, and you know that we got plenty of time for that, especially once we see what the salary cap's really going to be. But you're right, Ira, this is going to be destination number one in a lot of ways, between the location and Brady and the coaching staff, especially for the kind of veteran who might be looking for a one-year deal to bounce from there. I mean, what a destination this is, Ira, but the ultimate destination. I was so proud of them, so proud of them, and I think it's just so cool. Bill Curry Ford, they were closed Super Bowl Sunday just to watch the Bucks. That's how much they love the Bucks there. They gave up a whole day of sales. The weekend is busy in the car business. And you know what? They could have had some Super Bowl morning sale, but you know what? They said, this is too important. We're closing down. We're watching the Super Bowl. That's General Manager Sean Sullivan at work right there. He loves football, loves Bucks fans, wants to take care of everyone personally. And we mean that when we say that. He is your insider in the car business. Sean Sullivan, his email is at BillCurryFord.com, BillCurryFord.com. The showroom's a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. And of course, with Sean, you just have to mention Ira and you get a special discount. And the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles is always in effect. Get to BillCurryFord.com, check it all out. I mean, you, Ira, you were texting with Sean last night, you know, just as a fan, how he mirrors all the hardest of the hardcore fans, just absolute ecstasy.
You know, speaking of Sean Sullivan, Stevie, he's one of the great Buck fans you'll ever come across. He's also a very savvy general manager who finds a way to put you in a Ford vehicle when you walk in there. He will get the deal done to your satisfaction, and you'll be very satisfied. Steve, he called me Saturday night during the NFL Honor Show and couldn't take it anymore. It was halfway through, and they're introducing these Hall of Famers individually. And he goes, I can't take it anymore. I can't take the suspense about John Lynch. And the only thing I told him, Steve, of course, I knew Lynch was getting in at that point. I said, don't turn off the show, Sean. Don't turn it off. Watch the final hour. And he did, of course. And then, Steve, I'm sitting next to DeKemper in the press box on Sunday afternoon, and you know, about an hour before the game, DeKemper gets a text from Sean Sullivan. I'm having trouble breathing. I'm having trouble breathing. I mean, that's Sean Sullivan. And Steve, one more thing about the, you know, when I talked to him on Saturday night, I asked him, I said, how you feeling, Sean? How you feeling about this game tomorrow? You know what he said? I like the Bucks in a blowout. That's what he said, Steve. Now, I picked the Bucks 31-27. Most people picked the Chiefs, but the ones who picked the Bucks, I think most, you know, for the most part, thought it was going to be a close game. This game wasn't close, Steve. The Bucks were so far superior to the defending NFL champions. It wasn't funny. I the Chiefs were not in the game after the first quarter. They weren't in the game. The Bucks made them look really, really bad, outcoached them, outplayed them. And you talk about a well-deserved championship. To go from a number five seed and win three road playoff games and knocking off Drew Brees and Rodgers and Mahomes. What an accomplishment.
Ira, I want to let you know it was absolute pandemonium at Big Storm Brewery in Clearwater. I mean, just crazy. I saw some of the video, Bucks fans just going nuts. Tap room was full inside and in their beautiful outdoor 3,000 square foot area. That's where we're having the draft party, Ira. Make your plans, circle the date. It's late April, of course. The Bucks have the 32nd pick. It's going to be very exciting. You can only imagine how well lubricated everybody's going to be, Ira, once that that pick rolls around at midnight if they don't trade up. But just great times. We're so appreciative of Big Storm's support. And the best part is that they're Florida's best craft beer, and you can get them all, get it all over the place. BigStormBrewery.com. Put in your zip code there, and you can find out where it's sold near you. Big Storm beer, the Bromosa, the Tropic Pressure, just fantastic stuff. Sage?
Hey, Steve, speaking of the draft, the 2021 draft, isn't it a wonderful thing, Mr. Isbitz, that unless there's a trade up, that we might have to wait till midnight before the Bucks make their first pick? That's fantastic. Fantastic.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. I don't even know how to express it. And it's going to be even better, Ira, because fans, you know, who don't always come out because they can't get out of work early or they got some other commitments. You know what? This year, you're going to be able to just cruise into the draft party at 9:30, put your kids to bed, come on out and still have hours of fun. It's going to be a great time. Very excited to celebrate with fans like we always do, but we couldn't do last year at this time at Big Storm Clearwater with Florida's best craft beer. All right, Ira. Now, Lee did not sleep. He's one of those fans who was just working all night, going all night, celebrating all night. I know he was just going all the way through. He pulled the old-fashioned all-nighter, and so we gave him a little bit of a break, but we're going to bring him in now to give his piece and kick him in. He's our favorite third on the podcast. Lee, how did it go? What are your impressions of this historic Buccaneers victory?
Well, Steve, I guess I'm not alone. I did not sleep, and I wasn't drinking either, so I didn't have any help of alcohol to put me to sleep. I was so excited. I get home finally about 2:30, and I kept riding, and I kept riding, and the next thing I know, it's like pushing 6 o'clock, and the last thing I remember, it was 6:30 when I was shutting everything down. So I was literally up all night. But that's how excited I was. I noticed Jen Epstein of Channel 13. She got no sleep, but she was a lot better than I am. She was working Monday morning, and she was bragging about it. She was, heck yeah, I stayed up for the game. Still can't believe what happened. I'm so damn conditioned to losing. Bucks losing. I still think it's some kind of surreal dream. The Bucks won a Super Bowl at home.
Well, Lee, your biggest takeaway from the game itself. Not the pageantry or whatever you saw there or the people you rubbed elbows with. We already heard Iris say that you guys were sitting next to each other and he laid out the press box scene a little bit. But your biggest impression, biggest takeaway from the game itself, what sort of blew your mind about what the Bucks accomplished?
Defense. I mean, I'm one of the many that believes Mahomes is like a different quarterback. When I say different quarterback, I'm talking about elite. And that guy is Houdini on his feet. And they shut him down. They didn't score a touchdown. Honest to God, off the top of my head, I cannot remember the last time a team did not score a touchdown offensively in the Super Bowl. Maybe the Giants against the Ravens. I don't know if that's accurate or not. But when is that last time that's happening? This offense. I mean, this offense is ridiculously good, Kansas City. We saw it firsthand. We saw it firsthand back in November, what that offense could do. I've seen him come back from 3 touchdowns behind in a playoff game, and boom, in a blink of an eye, it's a tie game, or blink of an eye, Kansas City's winning. And the Bucks shut their rear ends down. Yes, I understand their offensive line was a shambles. Still, to hold the vaunted Kansas City offense with Cheetah Hill and those running backs and Kelsey, and to keep them out of the end zone. Like I heard someone say today, Annie Agar, who does spoof videos on social media about college football in the NFL, she said a fan got into the end zone before the Chiefs did, which is true, the streaker. So that just blew my mind, the defensive effort. Throughout the fourth quarter, almost every play, I was looking at the clock. I mean, where I was sitting in the press box, one of the clocks, it was above where John McKay's hat is in the Ring of Honor, but they had a Ring of Honor covered up because it was supposed to be neutral. Forget about the war chant, by the way. So straight away from where I was sitting in the press box was the clock. Every play in the fourth quarter, I'm looking up. I kept thinking, there's too much time. There's too much time. There's too much time. And pretty soon, there was no time. And only at that point not even after Winfield broke up the play and flashed the peace sign at Cheetah, not even then did I think that game was over. That's how much respect and how dangerous I believe that Kansas City offense is.
For me, the route was on. I mean, they just...
I know, I saw your post. I almost had a stroke.
And rile the masses on Twitter there. I mean, I didn't go that late, but 4.5 minutes left or so, they're just literally... They ran out of time, trailing by too much, and it was hard to believe. But, you know, in retrospect, the game was over at halftime. We didn't know it, but the game was over at halftime. It's just incredible. One of the more unique stats that's come out of the post game is the next gen stat that tracked Patrick Mahomes running 497 yards. 497 yards before he threw a pass or was sacked in this game, which is incredible. It was the highest total of the season, and it really speaks to how much the Bucs harassed him. I mean, the highest total of the whole NFL season, and they kept coming and coming and coming. And Peter King, I don't know if it's accurate yet. I didn't rewatch the game yet. But Peter King claimed the Bucs only blitzed 4 times, which is really incredible. It means the four-man rush dominated that much. And really, I wrote it. I hope you agree, and we're going to ask Ira. I believe that was the greatest Buccaneers defensive performance in history.
Now, well, I agree qualified. I qualify that agreement. The best defensive effort I ever saw was the 99 NFC Championship game. But here's the big but. They lost. So this was the greatest defensive effort I've ever seen from the Bucs in a win. Now, the Rams may have 4 different Hall of Famers on that offense, and the Bucs shut their ass down. Problem was, Dungy's offense, which is eventually cost Dungy his job and why Chucky saved the day. But yeah, outside of that loss, as far as the win, that I can't think of any defensive ever remotely close to that. I really can't. We're talking Mahomes here. Maybe Gannon in the Super Bowl, but even Gannon got a couple touchdowns, did he not? I know he got one for sure. I think he got two. He had 2 touchdown passes, I'm pretty sure, to Jerry Rice and Terry Porter. Even though that was an excellent defensive effort, that wasn't what it was Monday or Sunday night, what the Bucs did. Mahomes was a shell of himself. I returned to me with, inside the 2-minute warning at halftime. Ira stood up to go, I guess he went to go get a cupcake. And he stood up and looked at me and he said, "Mahomes stinks." And I was like taken aback. And I just thought to myself, don't say anything. Don't jinx it. Don't jinx it. That's how nervous I was. The Bucs are still going to lose. You know, I was like, I didn't even respond to Ira. At first, it shocked me that he said that. And second off, I didn't want to jinx anything. Like, yeah, Mahomes sucks. And then watch the guy throw for 4 touchdowns in the third quarter. I didn't say anything.
The Raiders, famously, they cut it to 34-21 in the fourth quarter. So it legitimately was a football game. You know, without question, this was a better turnout. And for me, you know, the 9 points, hey, they allowed 11 to the Rams. I get it. I mean, they're comparable performances. Mahomes' offense, you could argue that it, I don't want to say it's as good as the greatest show on turf, but it may turn out to be the same amount of Hall of Famers on the field compared to that. But I'm giving it to this one. It was the biggest stage. Ira, I wanted to throw this past you. You know, it's not from the game itself, but Levante David was one of the Buccaneers interviewed on the field by Jim Miller, SiriusXM NFL Radio. He was running around with his tape recorder and his guy interviewing people right on the field. So those are always great interviews, you know, right in the heat of the moment and stuff. And Miller's not afraid to ask questions. And one thing that Levante David said, and you know what a humble kind of quietish kind of guy he is. He said what a lot of other Bucks said is that they were really pissed off that they were doubted and that in his mind, everybody didn't think the Bucks were going to win. And Todd Bowles said the same kind of thing that nobody was picking the Bucks. And meanwhile, plenty of people were picking the Bucks, but these guys had it in their head that they were completely disrespected. And Levante David, he says this, Ira. He says, and for the fans who, you know, who doubted us tonight, whoever they may be, I hope you, and then he starts laughing. And then he says, I hope you, and he starts laughing again. And he says, I want to trash talk, but that's really not me. I mean, he was mad, and these guys had it under their skin. What's your feeling about all that?
My first reaction, gentlemen, is shame on Levante David for not listening to the Ira Kaufman podcast. Lee, because all three of us picked the NFC representative. Now, None of us picked 31-9, but that's no reason to hold it against us. We, you know, look, they were 3-point underdogs, deserved to be. I mean, the Chiefs were 14-2, Lee. One of the two games they lost, they didn't care about. It was the last game of the year. So essentially, you know, they were 14-1. Bucks were an 11-5 football team, had lost to the Chiefs. So, you know, I don't think he was mad at the odds makers. Maybe he's watching too many of those national shows, Lee. But as far as the three of us were concerned, I think we gave the Bucks their props. And Lee, you heard me say on, you know, the warm-up podcast to the game that I thought the Bucks were the better team, up to bottom. The Bucks are the better team. And I think we all agreed on that. So, you know, stop watching those Sunday morning shows and stop watching, you know, Michael Irvin and all of these characters. Lee, I can't believe that guys like Peter Schrager and Kay Adams, they're all Buck people. I doubt they picked against the Bucks. So I don't know what he was watching. Jimmy Johnson, Strahan, Dion. Forget about these people. You got to stick with the Ira Kaufman podcast over there, Lee.
Well, he's not the only person in his organization had a chip on his shoulder, even after a Super Bowl win. I'll just leave it at that because I know this place has ears. I'm not saying David is conning people. And yet, you know, this players have zero concept of objectivity. Zero. The best example I can use is Quan Alexander. He looked for anything and everything to get himself riled up. Someone could have said on one of these shows, I don't like the Bucks, all pewter uniforms. Oh, they're dissing us. They don't like us. You know, it's caca. And by the way, I think Schrager actually picked the Chiefs, believe it or not. But, you know, people take stuff and they think it's a personal shot. It's not even remotely that. And it's not just the players. And I heard the same interview Steve heard. I was driving home Sunday night, and they were broadcasting it, rebroadcasting it, I should say. I got more of the impression of these guys were flat-out embarrassed when they first played the Chiefs, and they were peeved about that. And by God, they were going to do something about that if they got the second chance at the Chiefs. And we saw what that happened. I mean, the greatest example is Winfield. You know, Winfield even said, he goes, Cheetah Hill, he goes, the guy backflipped on me and flashed a peace sign. I thought it was only right that I did it back to him. These guys were hacked off. I thought more so that they got embarrassed. And I'm not saying David's lying or anything. Even Aaron's referred to, he thought the guys were, you know, watching national shows. But and he even had a slight reference to Bowles even saying, or I think Aaron's direct quote was, I think he got tired of hearing about the unstoppable Chiefs.
Don't panic. Call Florida's Elite Restoration. If you see mold, if you have a leak, who knows what's going on. If you had a fire in the exhaust fan, floridaselite restoration.com is the website. They are our friends. They're there 24/7. And Ira, you know, that's the first call.
No question about it. We know all those people personally. Very, very impressive. And more importantly, Steve, we know clients that they've had that can't say enough about the professionalism of Florida's Elite Restoration, the honest assessment. You know, a lot of times it's not nearly as bad as you think it's going to be, and they'll put your mind to ease. But if it's a major issue, they'll take care of it, and that's what you want. You want that peace of mind, and that's what Florida's Elite Restoration is dedicated to.
floridaselite restoration.com.
You better sit down, Steve, because I know you may go crazy. You may go crazy for this one, Isbitz. I've been thinking about this. And I'll preface it. You know, Lee likes to preface a lot of his remarks. I'm going to preface it. Todd Bowles is a superb defensive coordinator. I don't think anybody can question that. Steve, I am going to suggest that people are going crazy about this defensive game plan, and they switched from man and zone, and Mahomes was confused, and they did this, and they did that. Steve, the job that Bowles did against the Saints in that second playoff game, it's not even close. He did a much better job. Give him more credit against the Saints, and I'll tell you why. Steve, I think we're overanalyzing this with the secondary and this, and Levante David played tight on Travis Kelce and this and that. Steve, let me spell it out to you, my friend.
five guys couldn't block four guys. End of story. That's the whole story of the game. Five guys couldn't block four guys. They didn't have to blitz much. They didn't have to cover for long. Mahomes is running for his life. Anybody else gets sacked five times that night, including Lamar Jackson. Anybody else? And Steve, do we have to go any further on Todd Bowles' intricate game plan than they couldn't block the Buck pass rush? I mean, does it get any more than that?
Ira, I'm with you. I don't think it's that complicated. And we talked on this podcast that Bucks had more talent, the more talented roster. You said it. I used it as a little teaser in the intro, I believe, to the last podcast. So they were down on the offensive line, and they just got eaten up in all phases of the game, including special teams, Ira, which was really cool to see.
Yes. Lee, I think the fact that they did it with a four-man pass rush, Lee, reminded me of the, you know, the 2003 Super Bowl against the Raiders. Four-man pass rush, Simeon going crazy, sap. The left end, I forgot his name. He had a very good Super Bowl.
Ellis Williams?
No. Steve, do you remember the guy's name? The left defensive end.
Wasn't Steve White.
Kyle Moore?
No, it wasn't Steve White.
Kyle Moore. I'm teasing you, Ira.
Lee, what I'm saying is, you know, you can talk Carlton Davis and Antoine Winfield and Whitehead all you want. But the guy was running for his life, Lee. I mean, every freaking drop back, every one, and Brady, he's got all day long. Nobody near him. And I think he was probably the third option on the play. So the contrast between what the and Lee, I don't blame Mahomes for the debacle on Sunday night. I can't blame Mahomes on that. But overall, as the game went on, Steve, I started to realize it ain't Mahomes' fault. It's just not. He was running for his life. And Steve, I don't think it's a reach to say, you know, some of those playoff games that Brady lost, and he hasn't lost a lot of them. Remember the two games against the Giants Super Bowl. There was a game against the Ravens and the Broncos when the Broncos had Von Miller and that great defense. He didn't look very good in those games, Steve. He was running for his life. He doesn't like to get hit. You know, the Bucks overwhelmed them, Steve. They just overwhelmed them, and in the end, you and I were right. The Bucks were the better team.
Sage, I wanted to sort of take you into some, Lee might call it mysticism, but not really. one thing that Bruce Arians said before the Super Bowl, before the playoffs kicked off, he said it several times in between, is that this team was incredibly close. And he likened it to his 2005 Steelers that he won the Super Bowl with and their closeness and how they are bonded with each other. And now we know that they couldn't really get that close because they just couldn't spend a ton of time together in a lot of different ways. But in Arians' opinion, they were very close anyway. And I want to ask you this. Now, obviously, a Super Bowl, winning a Super Bowl brings you a lot closer together. They had the big bash at Florida Aquarium, and, you know, you right. come back and it's a bond forever and all that. So, you know, obviously the Bucks want to retain their core, and they will. But how much better, Ira, in all seriousness, how much better do you believe this team can get? Do you think they peaked and we just witnessed something incredible? Or do you think this is the beginning of a legitimate, I don't want to say dynasty, but a legit run for the ages, if you will?
Well, the run for the ages, Lee, will continue until the man for the ages retires. And by that, I mean the Bucs will be a serious, serious Super Bowl threat until Brady hangs it up. I mean, I really do believe that. And if it's 3 years from now, it's 3 years from now. As far as the closeness is concerned, Lee, maybe I'm giving this guy too much credit. You tell me. But Brady's hands are all over everything. Lee,
yeah.
They're everywhere. And they had talent, and they went 7-9. They had talent, they went 5-11 and 5-11. They had talent. They had some core players in place, and they went nowhere. They spun their wheels. Here comes Brady. And Lee, one more point. I don't think we talk about this enough on this podcast, so now's the time. Lee, you got to go back to March, and you got to realize, in all honesty, this had a chance to be a disastrous move by the Bucks. Taking a quarterback at that age and building your team around them and bringing in veterans, if it didn't work, Lee, if they went 8-8 and didn't make the playoffs, it's a disaster. Lee, it's a disaster. What are you going to do? Get rid of Brady in year two? Who knows what happens with Arians, Leftwich, Bowles. So, Lee, looking back, people think, oh, it's the natural thing to do. The Bucs, no big deal. It was a hell of a gamble, Lee. It was a hell of a move by the Bucs. And no matter what happens from now on out, it's been a hell of a success story.
You know, obviously it was a gamble because no 43-year-old quarterback has done anything remotely close this year to what Brady did. Not even close. I won't say it was a disaster for this reason. There was always the out of the pandemic. Would have been disappointing, no doubt about it, been disappointing. But there was always that out. You could say, well, you know, they didn't have any offseason. They have a brand new quarterback. You know where I'm going with Ira. They could have always fallen back on that if for no other reason than an excuse. And people probably wouldn't argue. People would say, yeah, you know, you're right. You guys didn't have time to gel. You didn't have time to know each other. Okay. A normal year and they don't make the playoffs? Yeah, that's a disaster. But with the pandemic, that was an out. And still, they won it all. Number one, no offseason, the Bucs win the Super Bowl. Number two, every player that had a hand in a scoring, in a score, in the Super Bowl, you know, Brady throwing the ball, suck up kicking, the guys who caught the ball, Antonio Brown, playoff Lenny running the ball, Gronk, none of those guys were on the roster last year, which blows my mind. A Super Bowl winning team, every guy that had a hand in a scoring play was not on the roster the previous season. That's number one. Number two, three of those guys were not on the roster on August 31st. Leonard Fournette was signed on September 1st. So anybody trying to tell me you need preseason games, they can shove it up their floopus, as Chris Thomas would say, sideways.
Hey, gentlemen, hey, Steve,
Wait a minute. I got to disagree with you, Ira.
Make sure you got the word floopus.
I got to disagree with you, Ira. I got to disagree with you. Now, first, let me say this about Brady. He was the greatest 42-year-old quarterback in the history of professional football last season, and he was healthy. And so I don't think it was some sort of big risk whatsoever, and I don't think it was even some sort of huge gamble. I mean, they didn't want Jameis Winston back here. That was obvious. Otherwise, they would have re-signed the guy. It was his team. And they just didn't want him back. So what are you going to do? They were too good of a team to draft somebody. So they had to sign a free agent. If you went with Phillip Rivers, he had a nice season. But look, he's out of football. At least you knew that Brady wanted to play till 45. And what's the worst that would have happened if they went 8-8 and he didn't look as good as it thought? Well, all right. Maybe they would have traded him back to the Patriots and gone after Matthew Stafford or done something else next year. So I don't think it was some sort of massive gamble, only because of how well he played in 2019.
By the end of the year, he wasn't playing well, Steve. It didn't end well for Brady. It didn't. And he didn't play particularly well down the stretch. Now, gentlemen, I want all ears on this because you guys like it when I drop a nugget on this. I was going to tell you off air, but you know what? This is our podcast, and our Buck fans need to know about this. Gentlemen, 3 hours ago, my phone rang. No, it wasn't a Glazer. It was a 404 area code. I didn't recognize it. I'm thinking, maybe Arthur Blank's calling me. Maybe he wants to chat with Irv or something. Irv. You never know. You know, maybe Matt Ryan's calling me. Wants to try to get wants to see if the Bucks have any interest in him in 3 years. Guess who it was, gentlemen? Guess who it was? Okay. Mike Smith.
Really?
Mike Smith. How do you like that, Isbitz? He left a message, and when I called up the message, this shows you what kind of class act he is, especially because we've beaten him up a lot on this podcast. He called to congratulate me for John Lynch getting into the Hall of Fame. Mike Smith. I can't believe he still had my phone number, gentlemen. I thought he might have burned it by now, but that shows you what kind of class act we were dealing with, boys and girls. We didn't always agree with Mike Smith's approach, but Lee, you know this. We never questioned his character.
Oh, he was a great guy, a class act, but as quickly as I say that, I can hear someone some fan screaming from his favorite bar, "I don't give a bleep. I want him to coach." I agree with you. He's hired to coach, not hired to be a PR assistant.
Sage, I'm just trying to figure out why you would tell us that off air and not on the podcast. I'm glad you came to the right decision there, Ira. That wasn't some sort of top secret happening there. Call him back, Ira. Get him on the record with an apology to Bucks fans. And
you know what I might do is get a quote from on Rondé Barber. That's what, or Simeon Rice. That's what I might do, because you know me, Steve. I start working on the next year's Hall of Fame class a year before, so I'm in full work mode.
Well, that would be helpful. And you know what? Get some chatter. Remember, he used to sit around with Levante David. He taught him his defense. And, you know, that's a guy that he'd probably have some amazing perspective on, Sage. I got
a quick question for Ira.
Yeah.
You know, that little nugget about every Bucks point scored in the Super Bowl Sunday night had a hand from a player that was not on the roster the previous season.
That's outstanding.
Can you ever remember anything close to that? I can't.
No. And what's the common denominator, Lee, other than maybe suck up, which they needed a kicker no matter who the quarterback was? Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Antonio Brown would not be here without Brady. Gronk wouldn't be here without Brady. And Freeman probably wouldn't be here without
Fournette.
Yeah, playoff Lenny wouldn't be here probably if not for Brady. So you're right. And when you say Brady's fingerprints all over the team, you're absolutely correct.
And really, Lee, it starts with the quarterback, because what quarterback has changed teams and won a Super Bowl in his first year?
That's another good question.
You know, it took Peyton Manning 2 years, right?
Getting to the Super Bowl, I think, didn't Craig Morton do it his first year in Denver? Came from the Giants to the Broncos in his first year, and they got blown out by Dallas. I mean, destroyed.
Ira used to date Craig Morton's sister. Did you ever tell that story on the podcast, Ira?
Hey, Steve, speaking of Fournette, and we got plenty of time to talk about this, in the next month, but I think he's an interesting case in terms of free agency. I wonder how many teams will look at him as the guy, and if that's the case, does he want to come back and maybe share the load with Ronald Jones? Fournette's an interesting case, Steve.
Bill Simmons said Fournette is perfectly built for the Bucs offense. He said the Bucs offense, their running attack, is built for 4-yard runs. Not home run runs, but 4-yard runs. And he goes, that's perfect for Leonard Fournette. He just thought that was a marriage made in heaven. And I thought it was interesting, both him and Michael Robinson of NFL Network, who was a college quarterback. He was a fullback for Seattle. Both those guys are screaming, Ira. You got an offensive line to pound the ball. And I thought a couple of quarterbacks are saying that. I just thought that's interesting. They love the Bucks offensive line, and they said that they should play smash my football constantly, not once in a while.
Let me take you guys back to a little piece of history. When Bruce Arians was on the Ira Kaufman podcast back in June of 2019, we're sitting around with Bruce. We're doing the thing, and he says that I asked him about the running back situation. He says, quote, "I like our backfield. I think it's an okay backfield. There's not a David Johnson or a Todd Gurley, but you don't need one." And so I cut him off. I said, "Well, you could buy one, though, right? If we want to, they're out there." Arians proceeded to kick up his volume, and he said, "I don't overpay for that position." And it was very interesting. Mm-hmm. He was adamant, and you know what? The Bucks did not overpay for the position. They stuck with Peyton Barber, and then they stuck with Ronald Jones again, and they got Leonard Fournette on the cheap. They got Shady McCoy on the cheap. I don't think they're going to cut him a contract if Arians, has to prioritize. I think that might be last.
That's a good point.
I think you're right, Steve, and you didn't mention Vaughn, and I think Vaughn could play a prominent role next year. Speaking of the O-line, and I don't want this to go unsaid. I got here in 85. I've been watching this franchise closely for 36 years, and I feel comfortable saying this, man, with all due respect to Mike Evans or whoever else you want to mention. I think we just witnessed the best rookie season in the last 36 years. I can't speak for before 85, but Tristan Wirfs, guys, I'm telling you, I watched him Sunday night. I watch him every week. Lee, the next time he's out of position will be the first time. The next time he gets rolled by a rough defensive end will be the first time. The guy is absolutely sensational, and I ran it past Ian Beckles, who you know, will find the chink in anybody's armor, Lee, on the offensive line. He totally agreed with me. I ran it past Anthony Becht. You guys know Becht watches the old line like a hawk. He was a blocking tight end and always complains about the modern tight ends don't block. And he thinks Wirfs is just one of a kind. Guys, we witnessed an unbelievable rookie season from this right tackle.
Now, Brian Baldinger, former NFL offensive line, Wirfs. He says his technique is textbook. That's what you put up on a whiteboard. He said it's perfect. And all you need to know about Tristan Wirfs, where did the Bucs run mostly Sunday night?
Off right tackle.
Thank you. That's all you need to know. In a Super Bowl with everything on the line, where did they run? Behind that rookie right tackle. That shows you how much confidence they had in him.
Ira, they got their Quentin Nelson. It just came at right tackle, and a couple years later, that's all.
That's right, Steve. And don't forget, they made a move up to get him. I mean, they could have took Kinlaw, I believe, who the Niners ended up taking after Wirfs, and they could have taken Kinlaw at defensive tackle, and nobody would have said anything. You can't have too many defensive linemen. Lee would have nodded in approval. And instead, they wanted Wirfs, and they got him. And, you know, he turned out to be the best of the bunch, Steve.
Sage, Devin White, this is really important news. Devin White spoke out on Twitter today saying that, and he asked Jason Light on Twitter whether he could ride his horse around Raymond James Stadium. And Jason Light responded saying, absolutely great idea. You know, you earned it. And
Cowboy.
I was thinking, Ira, you know, really, I hope they allow that to happen. I know you know more about these things. Are there animal laws that would prohibit it? Would the horse have to be masked? We don't know if the horse would have to wear a mask.
And
I was really thinking, you know, they should just do it right. Let him start at Bill Curry Ford, a mile north. You know, let Devin White, you know, get him up to top speed on Dale Mabry. They can clear the road for 10 minutes. And then do a victory lap. You can bring Cosmo out there. Jason Light can bring his dog out so it doesn't crap in the kitchen like during a draft night. And what do you think?
Steve, you didn't tell the full story, Steve. And I don't blame you because what you left out was after Light's initial conversation with Devin White. Yeah, Devin, I think that's a great idea. I think you can do it. And I'll bring Kaufman out behind you with a shovel. And he can follow the horse along the route. You left that part out, Stevie.
I did, Ira. Well, you know, I didn't want to give you extra work. I know how you like to be paid for everything. So, yeah, I didn't want to pay for that.
Well, you know, it's got to be with a half full stadium. You know, what they dropped the ball. They should have had the horse in a stable outside the stadium, ready to run laps on the inside of the stadium if the Bucs won. They didn't do that. Maybe the NFL stopped them. Maybe they're more concerned with animals than the war chant being played every time the Chiefs go on the field. Yeah, that's really under my skin, and the Bucs couldn't shoot the cannons off, but they could play the war chant every time Kansas City was on defense. At any rate, it's got to be when people are in the stadium. Now, if they want to have a big, massive parade, and the parade ends at Raymond James Stadium, okay, great. That'd be awesome. They want to do it the opening game of the 2021 season, the home game, that would be awesome, too, especially if it's on national TV. But don't do it when the stadium's empty. That's lame.
And, Steve, speaking of Devin White, and you guys see the same stories I do, I've seen at least two, maybe three, different stories with a headline saying the NFL's best linebacker. I mean, look, you could argue the point. It's certainly not a slam dunk. But just to be in that conversation, Lee, after two NFL seasons, boy, what a draft pick at number 5 for Devin White. Maybe he is, Lee. I mean, I can't think of too many guys better.
First off, that him getting testing positive for the COVID, that may have been the best thing that happened to the Bucs. He's played like he's been shot out of a cannon ever since he had that 2-week vacation. You know, when he came back in the playoffs, he's been an animal since then. So, you know, everybody should get the damn virus if that's what it does for you. But Now, this is when I was driving home Sunday night. I'm listening to Sirius XM and NFL Radio. And Moving the Chains, you know, Pat Kerwin, we all love Pat Kerwin, and Jim Miller, they had their show going. Zig Rakowski was co-hosting this, and they were he was talking about, well, you know, the Bucs won this championship, and it really is an unloaded roster. Kerwin then asked him, Zig, how many Hall of Famers are on defense? And Zig says, none. And Jim Miller responds, keep your eye out for Devin White. The dude just finished his second year in the season, and these guys who are not, they're not prone to hyperbole like that, Kerwin and Miller. Miller said, look out for Devin White. He's already talking about him as a Hall of Famer.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, Steve. But you know what? I think Ndamukong Suh's building a nice little case, Steve. I don't think you can dismiss him.
Sage, let me throw you in this direction here. I had mentioned before about the closeness of the team, and you know, this is not something that really even translates very well to a podcast, but it's interesting, and I wanted to run it past you. You know, Lee and I have our photo genius who's out there at the games taking pictures, and he does more than that. He sprays a lot of pictures for us and lets us look at the raw footage, so it almost sometimes looks like video, like you can see 20 pictures in a row of something that happened. And as far as the closeness of the team, I thought it was very interesting looking at some of these pictures. First, one thing I thought was interesting is, you know, we talk about the relationship of Leftwich and Brady and what Leftwich brings to the table. There's an array of pictures where Giselle is completely embracing Byron Leftwich and they're chatting and there's more embrace and they're pointing at each other and they're laughing. And I can't imagine that how it happens if, you know, if there's not a very strong relationship and a bond and Leftwich is, you know, just out of the loop. And also, I thought it was very interesting seeing in those pictures Mike Evans really just smiling and so happy to see Tom Brady's kids, and he's embracing them and he seems to know them, and Giselle's hugging him. I'm just wondering how close the whole team really was behind the scenes and some of the stuff they accomplished in the spring and in the summer. Is it worth even reading into some of those pictures, Ira?
I think you're making a good point on the Leftwich angle, because Giselle's with Brady, and you know, if he had anything to bitch about with Leftwich, even during, you know, going into that bye week, that bad third quarter of the season when Brady was throwing, you know, 7 picks, I believe, during that quarter of the season, she would have known about it. She would have sensed it. Even if he didn't say it, she would have sensed it. The satisfaction with the offensive coordinator. And you're right. Those pictures paint quite a different story. Look, it's a close team. And Lee, when you're on an 8-game winning streak at the close of the season, that tends to get you pretty close, too. But this team hung together through the doldrums of 7-5 going into that bye week, and a lot of people questioning what was going on. Give Arians some credit, too, Lee, for setting a fraternal tone that we're all in this together. But ultimately, it does come down to Mr. Brady. And, you know, success just follows this guy around, Lee. After a while, you got to say to yourself, man, it ain't no coincidence anymore. He's one of a kind. Lee, the other day I got into more trouble because every time I get into Twitter, Lee, somebody's taking a pot shot at me. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But, you know, they said Tom Brady is the greatest winner in the history of team sports. Well, that sounds good, and you could make that argument, but I kind of threw up the name of Mr. Bill Russell.
16 Bill? Championships?
11 championships, 11. 13 seasons, 11 championships.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Now, look, there's only, 12 guys on a basketball team, and he had talent around them. But so does Brady. And people thought I was trying to diminish Brady. Lee, you know, these young guys, they don't even know who Bill Russell is. Bill, who? What are you talking about?
Ira.
It drives you crazy. It drives you crazy.
Ira, I think Bill Russell's a bad example, Ira. It's the only one we got. But it's a bad example, and not that I was around to watch Bill Russell, but you know how big the NBA was in 1960, Ira? You know how many teams the NBA had?
Steve, you know who he was going, you know who he went up against?
Are you going to answer that question, Ira?
I'm going to answer that question with a hell of a fact that's going to blow you away.
It's an 8-team NBA, eight. Brady's got 32 teams to compete against. I don't think that the math sides with Bill Russell.
Well, two things. One, you only got 8 teams instead of 32, and the talent's diluted over 32 teams when you got to be one hell of a player to be one of 100 players in the whole damn league. Number two, and you probably never heard of this guy either, Isbits, he had to play Wilt Chamberlain 150 times. Did you hear what I just said? 150 times he went up against Chamberlain. Now, he won about 95 of them. And if Chamberlain's not the greatest player in history, he's pretty damn close to it. And Russell's teams beat Chamberlain's teams. And I was a 76er fan. But any 76er fan has to respect William Felton Russell. So don't sell the man short, Steve. He was the ultimate winner in his sport. Ultimate.
I'm not selling him short. I'm saying it doesn't compare to Brady when you're looking at a bigger team sport where one guy can have less impact. When you're looking at 32 teams versus eight, I don't think it's even an argument, Ira. But you know what? We don't have to argue about it.
And Lee, I'm not trying to take anything away from Brady. I just don't want people to forget about Bill Russell.
Well, you could also throw in Otto Graham.
Yes.
Here's one for you.
Wait, Ira, I got some breaking news, Lee. I got breaking news. Ira, you know what? In 1968, the NBA was up to 10 teams. So that Wilt Chamberlain stuff was a big deal.
I understand, Steve. I understand.
I'm just teasing you. Go ahead, Lee.
Well, the closest thing Arians is talking about, he's kind of backtracking. In his interviews, he's done several the last couple days. You know, he's going around saying Gronk doesn't know anybody's name. Or not, I should say. There are players on the roster. He doesn't know their name because of the COVID. They couldn't, you know, he was on Jimmy Kimmel talking about family. They would always have family day on Saturday practice. Always have family day. Well, he can't have that this year. And he said, Gronk really doesn't know. There's a couple players. He doesn't know their names. So he's backtracking now all of a sudden. And here's another thing. And I'm not going to make much of it because I don't know the circumstances. I'm not even going to say the guy's name. What I will tell people to do, if they're interested in who I'm talking about, and I'm not saying this is bad, good, indifferent, I don't know, it just looks unusual. When the Bucks won, the moment they won the Super Bowl, game's over, the fireworks start, the confetti starts, the bench clears out, everybody's running down to the 20-yard line to embrace, to jump on top of each other, to do snow angels in the confetti, to just go bananas. There's one Buck starter standing on the sidelines on the far end of the field on the 15-yard line with his hand on his hips watching it, not even involved. And if people want to know who that is, I suggest they go to Dan Lucas's Instagram site, his page, his feed, whatever you want to call it. He's got two videos. You look in the middle of the video on the bottom of the screen, you can see who that is. I don't know the circumstances around it. I don't know if he was so drained he couldn't move. I don't know if he was stunned. I don't know if he wanted to just absorb the moment. But he was by himself. While everybody else is embracing, jumping up on top of each other, slobbering on themselves, he's by himself.
You're not even going to give us a clue over there, DeKemper?
I said he was a starter.
All right. Ira, it was very similar to when you walked up to the buffet and you realized the the brownies were gone.
No forks.
And the cookies were history. And you know how that goes. Ira, get us out of this podcast. We've got another one this week. And of course, our thanks to Bill Curry Ford, who we heard from earlier. Love Bill Curry Ford. BillCurryFord.com. GM Sean Sullivan is ready for you at all times to assist you in any way he can. And the Ira Kaufman discount is there, the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. And remember, Florida's EliteRestoration.com. You head there, you call them immediately if you have any disaster in your home. Sage, get us out of here with some thoughts, and we'll be back later in the week.
I got the perfect way to wrap this up, gentlemen, and it's worth noting. You know, both of the Bucs Super Bowls, both of them, by the end of that season, and including Sunday night, there was no doubt that the Bucs were the best team in football. There was no doubt. And the reason I say that is there have been other Super Bowls. Guys, I go back, 1970. It was a terrible Super Bowl. And I think Baltimore beat Dallas on that last second field goal. And then you had
throws his helmet 50 yards.
Yeah. Then you had Pittsburgh beat Seattle with a couple of gadget plays in 2006, and you had the Giants beat Buffalo with the wide right kick. And in those circumstances, guys, when the season ended, you could really make an argument for the other team. You really could. I mean, you probably could even do that with the 68 Jets beating the Colts. A lot of people think if they played 10 times that Baltimore would win 7 of those games. Well, the Bucs are the best team in football, just like the 2002 Bucs were the best team in football. And I think that just puts a little bit of a cherry on top of the sundae. Lee, they won it. They won it decisively. And I don't want to hear about officials' calls. And I don't want to hear about Andy Reid being distracted. The Bucs were the better team, Lee. We thought so going in, and they proved it.